This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. And by AircraftLauncher.com, the UAV launcher that made Ag Eagle famous. AircraftLauncher.com helps fixed-wing drone suppliers and manufacturers launch their fixed-wing drones safely and efficiently with a self-contained bungee power catapult launcher. Learn more at AircraftLauncher.com. You're listening to episode 216 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we?
Doing good, David. How are you?
I'm really good. Had a really good weekend. Got to see the Philadelphia Pops play John Williams, focusing on Star Wars, but they also played all of the Academy Award-winning music. So it was a very good weekend, but we really need to be talking about drones and not Star Wars. This is not a Star Wars podcast.
Yes, you're right.
So I guess we should be talking about making American aviation great again, a microbot that flies and swims, a competitor bows out of the MQ-25 Stingray, a five-day unmanned endurance flight. I almost said a five-man
undayed endurance flight,
and a webinar and a podcast. Oh, it's going to be a long night for editing for you. So I guess we should get started. What do you think?
Let's jump right in.
Well, our first story is from transportation.gov, otherwise known as the Department of Transportation, the DOT here in the United States. A quote, "Our nation will move faster, fly higher, and soar proudly towards the next great chapter in American aviation." That was our President Donald J. Trump. What is this about?
Well, this is very interesting. This is a presidential memorandum for the Secretary of Transportation. And in it, President Trump directs the U.S. Secretary of Transportation to, quote, "launch an initiative to safely test and validate advanced operations for drones in partnership with state and local governments in selected jurisdictions." So the executive branch here is jumping in, I guess, to try to, well, maybe not jumpstart, but a sort of accelerate what's happening with unmanned aircraft. This is called the Unmanned Aircraft Systems Integration Pilot Program, and it has two big goals. First, to accelerate the safe integration of UAS into the national airspace, and the second goal is to realize the benefits of unmanned technology in the economy. You know, there's a number of articles out there that are trying to interpret this. But I think what we did here, David, for this episode is note those stories in the press, but for the most part, focus in on the actual directive and what it says. And it involves a number of different sections.
Well, let's start off with section one, and that's policy. Quote, "It shall be the policy of the United States to promote the safe operation of unmanned aircraft systems, or UAS, and enable the development of UAS technologies for use in agriculture, commerce, emergency management, human transportation, and other sectors." So, well, sounds like we're going to be in a job for a while if we're going to be doing all that promotion. What do you think, Max?
Yeah, now what this lays out is some concepts that the regulatory, and they all sound pretty good, at least to me, I think. The regulatory framework needs to be flexible and keep pace with the advancement of technology. It also talks about balancing privacy and civil liberties protection. So there's at least a recognition that those are issues. Also sets out policies that mitigate risks to national and homeland security. that protect the safety of the American public, as well as infrastructure and the nation's airspace. And that section also talks about the need for continued input from the private sector, as well as the involvement of state, local, and tribal governments in federal efforts to, it says, develop and enforce regulations on UAS operations in their jurisdictions. So I think it starts out pretty well. I mean, it says that we really want to advance the technology and particularly the implementation of it so that it has the positive impact on our economy, but we need to take into consideration these other issues as well. So I think it's a good start.
It means that everybody can work together. You know, the federal government is acknowledging that the state, local, and tribal governments have a stakeholder involved with this. Maybe it's a diplomatic way of saying that, you know, we're going to write the rules, but we understand that you guys need to hear what we're saying, or we need to hear what you as the other organizations are saying. So it's a very broad charter. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Broad. And again, I kind of like it, I guess, because it is broad, because it sort of lays a foundation without being too specific. It kind of establishes the ground rules, I guess, for what's to come here that we'll get into.
Section 2 is the U.S. UAS Integration Pilot Program. Pilot as in starting. The federal government had to be punny about this, right? It was a pilot program. Within 90 days, the Secretary of Transportation will consult with the FAA administrator and establish a UAS integration pilot program to test the further integration of UAS into the NAS in a select number of state, local, and tribal jurisdictions, NAS being the National Airspace System. So what are the objectives with this pilot program? That really is going to bother me for a while there, because, folks, it's pilot, not as in start, not as in
fly an airplane.
Operate.
Right. So the objectives, there are three objectives of this pilot program. One is to test and evaluate various models of state, local, and tribal government involvement in the development and enforcement of federal regulations for UAS operations. The second objective is to encourage UAS owners and operators to develop and safely test new and innovative UAS concepts and operations. And the third objective of the pilot program is to inform the development of future federal guidelines and regulatory decisions on UAS operations nationwide.
So, I mean, it's a good start. I think basically this is putting concrete what the FAA and the Department of Transportation have been doing now for as long as we've been doing this show. So just to keep a focus and move forward. The nice thing about it is it's falling under the Department of Transportation, not just the FAA. What do you think about that, Max?
Yeah, and so it's at that higher level. And coming up, we'll talk about coordination between different government agencies, and this will be kind of important that it sort of has risen up to the DOT level. But the third section here, now we start to get into a little more of the specifics about what this directive is looking to. And this is the implementation section.
Part one, solicit proposals from the state, local, and tribal governments to test within their jurisdictions the integration of civil and public UAS operations into the NAS below 200 feet above ground level or up to 400 feet above ground level if the secretary determines that such an adjustment would be appropriate. Interesting specs there, huh?
Yeah, this is the low altitude stuff. This is saying, and I don't know why 200 feet, but 200, 400, this is the low level altitude stuff. And it's looking at proposals from those local governments. And so this is their opportunity. Now, you recall in the previous section that They were talking about the pilot program being for selected jurisdictions. So it is a pilot program. The way that these are selected for the program is part of this as well, and we'll get into the criteria. But that's another part of this implementation section, is that the DOT or the FAA shall select proposals from the state, local, and tribal governments for participation in the program. And this is according to certain criteria. And then the federal government will enter into agreements with those governments that establish the terms of their involvement in the UAS operations within their jurisdictions, including, interestingly enough, their support for federal enforcement responsibilities.
And there's the rub. That's a really important line. Operate within their jurisdictions, including support for federal enforcement responsibilities. You want to play in our sandbox, you're going to play by our rules.
It also notes that the implementation may require using existing authorities for exceptions, exemptions, authorizations, and waivers. And they talk about including waivers for the 14 CFR Part 107, our favorite Part 107, in certificates of waiver or authorization under Section 333. So it recognizes that they or that waivers or exemptions may be necessary, and it points that out. But when we look at the consideration for the selection of proposals, now we're getting to kind of a more detailed level of direction here from the executive branch. And there are a lot of considerations. They're not weighted or anything, I don't think, but it includes things like the overall economic, geographic, and climatic diversity of the selected jurisdictions, the diversity of the proposed models of government, and the diversity of the UAS operations to be conducted. So looking for broad spectrum, I think.
You know, but part of me says, and maybe you feel differently, Max, but part of me says, doesn't this sound a little bit like the FAA test centers?
In some ways, yes. And deeper into this directive, it makes note of taking best practices from things that have occurred in the past and are continuing to occur. And one of the examples of that that's noted is the UAS test centers. So this is not creating something that's, I think, at odds with the test centers or with what the FAA has done in the past. It's kind of a reinforcement of it in some ways. And the requirement that the FAA and the DOT now go out to the local levels and engage with them. There's some other criteria mentioned here, the involvement of commercial entities in the proposal, their ability to advance objectives that may serve in the public interest, the involvement of affected communities, the commitment of the governments and UAS operators involved in the proposal to comply with requirements. Here, this is back to your point, David, comply with requirements related to national defense, homeland security, and public safety. You know, there again is bringing that agenda into this.
I like the next ones because I start singing. I feel like I'm back in elementary school. Promote the innovation and economic development, enhancing transportation safety, enhancing workplace safety, improving emergency response and search and rescue functions, and using radio spectrum efficiently and competitively. Hmm. We haven't talked about much of that, have we? About, you know, not only it's the Department of Transportation, but the Federal Communication also, that, you know, we have to make sure that we're using the right spectrums for the radio and that technology. That's one of those things that snuck in that it was sort of like, oh, but interesting, there's no mention of the FCC. It's all measured by the Department of Transportation. So I don't know if they act as the feeder into the FCC or not.
Yeah, interesting point. In fact, and that really leads into the next section, which is Section 4, Coordination. And it lists different agencies and entities that are required to coordinate with others. So, for example, The FAA is to coordinate with NASA to inform the development of the UAS traffic management system that NASA is working on. The DOT is required to coordinate with the Secretaries of Defense and Homeland Security, as well as the Attorney General, to mitigate safety and security risk and comply with relevant laws and regulations. And then there's some other coordination requirements in here.
Department and agency heads implement the best practices for compliance. Federal law enforcement coordinates with DOT and FAA and local law enforcement. There is a common theme throughout this whole proposal that the FAA is running, the feds are running the show, not the local, tribal, or state government. The Department of Transportation and Department of Homeland Security and the Attorney General will coordinate to test counter UAS capabilities as well as platform and system-wide cybersecurity to the extent appropriate and consistent with the law. There's a big one. We're going to let you fly all you want, but we're also going to test the anti-drone stuff.
Yeah, I think I like the idea that cybersecurity or the security aspects of unmanned aircraft are considered as part of this. I think that's a good move. I think that's an area that's been a little bit, lacking maybe in some good thinking and in research. So, I like seeing that there.
And last, Section 5 is evaluation and termination of the UAS integration pilot program. It's a 3-year program, can be extended by the Department of Transportation. And the final report will be within 30 days of the 3-year program.
90 days.
Yeah, what he said. Final report was within 90 days of that end of the 3-year program. So we've got till 2020 to talk about this, Max.
That's right. I think you're right. We'll be talking about this quite a lot. There are some timeline requirements in there that I found a little bit confusing when I read it a couple of times, and I had trouble reconciling some of the timelines listed in there. But they're all near term. They're 90 days, 180 days. The DOT and the FAA needs to start this program right away, basically, in order to meet those kind of timelines. So we'll have a lot of good stuff in the show notes, not only the directive itself, and I think that's kind of the source, but also some of the articles that talk about it and some other things. So if you want to get into this a little bit more deeply, take a look at the show notes at the uavdigest.com/216.
So I guess, should we move beyond this since we're going to be talking about this for the next 3 years?
Yeah, we can go from this sort of big picture kind of look at unmanned aircraft to the very teeny, teeny, tiny.
Wow. Great segue. You were practicing that one for this show, weren't you?
It just came to me.
This is from the Canadian Broadcast Company, or CBC.ca. Harvard University engineers have developed the RoboBee. An insect-sized robot can go from air to water and back again. 175 milligrams, huh? Sounds like it's the size of a pill.
That's really, really small. If you convert that to ounces, it's 0.006 of an ounce. This is a really little lightweight thing that can fly. They've demonstrated this in the past flying, but now they have a underwater modification to it. The wing flaps at the wings... flap or beat in the air at about 250 beats per second, which is way too fast to navigate underwater. When it's submerged, it's swimming around, flying through the water, I guess, at about 9 beats per second. But that wasn't the hard part. The hard part is when this thing, this little tiny thing, comes up out of the water, it's so small and light that surface tension of the water becomes a big issue. And they had problems with this thing breaking through the surface tension. So what did the engineers do? Well, they came up with something fairly novel for the RoboBee. What they've done is they've added a little teeny tiny device that uses electrolysis. And what it does is it takes some of the water and it converts it through electrolysis into hydrogen and oxygen. goes into a little chamber, which provides some buoyancy that brings the robo-bee up. And then there's an igniter that ignites the gas, and you get a little, maybe it's too small to call it an explosion, but when the gas ignites, it kind of propels this robo-bee up through the water back into the air. So really interesting things that they're doing in order to to enable this little tiny robo-bee to get from out of the water up into the air.
You'd never think we'd be talking about surface tension. And folks,
no.
When we do record this, just as a little background, Max and I actually look at each other through Skype video. And to watch him go really tidy with his little fingers as he's narrating this description was quite humorous, just as a little background to how we handle this show. And I'm sure he'll cut this out. But yes, it's a very, very teeny tiny thing. But let's talk about other nautical flying drones like the MQ-25 Stingray, which we know is an outgrowth of the current X-45 program. And evidently, someone's decided they don't want to play anymore. They're taking their drone and going home.
Yes, Northrop Grumman decided that they're not going to compete in this. I think you'll recall there were three companies competing here, and Northrop Grumman, even though they were the ones that developed the original test platform, they're pulling out. We get this from an October 25th earnings call where Wes Bush, the Northrop CEO, said, quote, "When we're looking at one of these opportunities, our objective is not just to win. Winning is great. It feels good on the day of an announcement. But if you can't really execute on it and deliver on it to your customer and your shareholders, then you've done the wrong thing." So they don't have the confidence that this is the right program for them to execute on. You know, one reason, or maybe the reason, could be that, I guess, David, originally this concept was for a strike platform, right? And that's now changed to a unmanned tanker. And maybe that's not really what Northrop Grumman thinks they're best at.
You know, it's really kind of funny because, to be honest, if we're going to be for me to look at this, I think Northrop Grumman is tired of the Navy moving the goalposts.
Because that's expensive.
It is. Well, yes. And you should know, you've been in this industry. This program keeps changing and morphing, and it's not settled or consistent. So I think maybe it's a way of Northrop Grumman saying, you know what, we're done. We can't keep changing the rules. You know, you want us to design something, but if the parameters and the specifications keep changing, we're never going to get to design it. Not to mention Northrop Grumman has got the B-21 bomber that program they're working on. So they're not going to really be hard up for cash or but I can see it would be really frustrating if the rules kept changing on this program. I'm not even sure if the Navy really knows what they want anymore.
And I don't think this is a bad thing. I think, you know, other people have said this. It's easy to say yes, and it can be much harder to say no. And what Northrop Grumman here is, you know, for whatever reasons they have internally, they've decided that they should not or cannot or will not continue with the program. That's fine.
We'll see what happens with the rest of the program, who else the other competitors will do. So we've got an update from way back in episode 179 about vanilla aircraft. And we're not just talking a plain Jane vanilla aircraft, are we?
I know. High endurance aircraft. Back then, we talked about the VA-001, which had just completed a nonstop, unrefueled 56-hour flight. They did that at the New Mexico UAS Flight Test Center. Well, now we see that the same aircraft has completed a 5-day flight starting at NASA Wallops Flight Facility. They flew for 5 days, and interesting, David, when they landed, they still had 3 days' worth of fuel left, but I guess this is a new record now.
With 50 pounds of payload, you know, 5 days is a long time to fly an airplane. And then to realize that you had 3 days left over of gas, I mean, most airlines would kill for that kind of fuel efficiency.
A little update. Vanilla Aircraft continues to develop their capabilities here. They say that they plan to start production in the coming months. I'm not sure exactly what the coming months means, but I guess that means sometime in the not too distant future. And they look to a number of different applications for a ultra long endurance unmanned aircraft like this one.
It's pretty cool. I mean, it was sponsored by NAVAIR. So they persistent surveillance, you know, we've talked about predators and reapers flying for a couple of days, but 5 days is a long time to be able to have a persistent surveillance aircraft in the air, you know. So I feel bad for the guys that have to fly it, though. You know, that's a long time to be spending in a box, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's when autonomous really takes on new meaning, I guess. Well, David, there's a couple of items that we wanted to mention that are not so much news, but are worthy of mention. One is an upcoming webinar. This is from AOPA, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, who we've talked about and who we know are really embracing unmanned aircraft along with the traditional manned aircraft that has been their history. And on November 10th, 2017, at 8 p.m. Eastern, they're going to have a free webinar that is going to include a discussion on how the drone space has evolved. Also, important legal matters that you need to be aware of. The title of this drone talk is Drones and the Legal Landscape. And so take a look at this, the link in the show notes. It's very easy. If you click through it, you'll be able to register where you just provide your name and email address. And on the day of the webinar, they'll send you instructions on how to get in. So we thought we'd mention that one.
And of course, we'd like to thank our former guest, Kat Swain, who is the Senior Director of UAS Programs for AOPA. And both Max and I will encourage you to become members of AOPA, because we both are. And neither one of us are pilots. So it's a great organization, and this is a great outreach.
Absolutely. And Kat, as well as some other AOPA folks, will be part of this webinar. And then another, just really quickly, our friend Marcus Volter over at the Omega Tau podcast has an episode that looks at the Quantum Systems Tron drone. It's a vertical takeoff and land drone. And he talks in this episode with the CEO of Quantum Systems. If you're not familiar with the Omega Tau podcast, Marcus goes into great detail for whatever subject or whatever is the subject of his episode or the topic of his episode. He really looks at it from kind of an engineer's standpoint, I guess. I hope Marcus would hear that as a compliment, really examines the topics in a lot of detail. So we'll put a link in the show notes to that. That's his episode 267, which is the Quantum Tron UAV.
I'm sure that it will be a in-depth discussion, and definitely listen to. It's one of our favorite podcasts. You know, we're all in this together, and if we can give a shout out to somebody else, we'll be happy to do it, because we all spin it a little differently. But so, Marcus, we love you, and we're looking forward to hear some more UAV stuff. So we've got a new sponsor.
Yes, we do. I just wanted to mention quickly, and you heard it in the pre-roll, we've got a sponsorship with aircraftlauncher.com. Their tagline is the launcher that made Ag Eagle famous. And this is a launcher that is used for fixed-wing drones. This is not hobby grade. This is professional or commercial grade. So we invite you to take a look at that if you're interested in how to launch fixed wing drones. And you can find out more at aircraftlauncher.com. All right, David, I think with that, we'll bring this episode to a close. We want to thank all of you for listening to the UAV Digest. You can find us at the UAVDigest.com. We also have some pretty extensive show notes that Drone Mama is working on actually as we speak. And you can go straight to the notes for this episode at the UAVDigest.com/216.
And of course, you can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest. You can find us on Facebook at UAV Digest. We would love for you to become part of our Slack listener team, where there's all sorts of conversations going on about professional, semi-professional data management, a really in-depth geek out of people who are really our high profile listeners and are willing to share and get into in-depth conversations. So if you'd like to join that team, send us an email at feedback@theUAVDigest.com and we'll send you an invitation because it's invite only. That's how exclusive this club is. You can, of course, email us always at feedback@theUAVDigest.com. If you're overseas from the United States, definitely if you see some news that pertains to you and you want Max and I to commentate about it, definitely send us links to so we can look at them and discuss them, because we'd love the international aspects also, not just what happens here in the States. You can leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. And of course, you can purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store or become a patron of the show at patreon.com. So I'm going to say this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.